Jim, what is the Alberta Biodiversity Monitoring Institute?
It's an institute that was developed, started developing back in about 1997, 98, and has continued since that. The goal of the program is to be able to track status and change of the ecosystems, think the critters, throughout Alberta over time. So it's designed to give an assessment of the health of the ecosystems throughout Alberta. The program started in the late 90s. Since that time, we've done a pilot, and in 2007, the program was implemented as the Alberta Biodiversity Monitoring Institute, a non-for-profit organization, and we have, since 2007, been ramping up data collection in the program.
You're the science director. You also work with Alberta Innovates Technology Futures, previously the Research Council. And I understand that there's a number of different partners. What role would Technology Futures play in this?
There's two pieces where AITF, Alberta Innovates Technology Futures, is very involved. One is the work that I do in the science part of the organization, so managing science and technical aspects of the program, and I work with another director, Stan Booten, at the University of Alberta in the science part of it. And we together then manage the science and technical aspects. There's another piece that AITF's involved with, and that is the actual field data collection. So Colin Twitchell is the monitoring director, and every year they hire 30 to 40 undergrads to go out into the field to collect data on a whole bunch of critters, vascular plants, bugs, lichens, moss, mammals, birds. And that data then comes into the program. And much of the dollars that are spent on the program actually go through Colin's shop. So the data collection is by far the biggest part of the program. And that is also then run through AITF.
Now, I understand that this is actually quite unique in the world. Why is it necessary to have this kind of program?
In 97, we were at a meeting, just a discussion, and we said, you know, wouldn't it be great if we were able to track status and change in the ecology as we change the environment? It was at a forestry meeting, and we were at that stage talking about forest activities. We said, there's a bunch of things happening in the forest, and on an individual basis, we know what happens in cut blocks and we know what happens on roads, but we really don't have a good feel for what are the consequences, the ecological consequences to the whole of the ecosystem. And we said, wouldn't it be great if we could develop such a thing? And so there was six or seven of us sitting around the table, and we said, well, it can't be that hard. If we put our heads together, we think we can do it. It turns out it was hard, and it took a lot more than six or seven people. But over the course of the next 5 or 6 years, we were able to build enough momentum to get folks interested to push a program ahead. First of all, it was for the forest. So the program started out as the Forest Biodiversity Monitoring Program, and then in 2004, became a province-wide program, so monitoring biodiversity throughout the whole of the province. But it was all stemmed back to that need to be able to assess health of the ecosystem at a broad regional level. Are we maintaining the things that we want within the province, the ecological things?
Well, given the amount of development that's going on in Alberta, particularly in the northeast with the oil sands and forestry, are the goals that you originally set out with, are they being accomplished?
The goals of the program are to track status and change. So we are not a management organization. And so management is still done by regulators and or the developer. But the goals of the program to track status and change, yes, we've moved quite a long ways in the last 10, 12, 13 years. It started out with an idea. We then tested the idea as part of a pilot program in the Southern Boreal, and since 2007 have actually started rolling out the program, implementing the program throughout Alberta. Due to funding constraints, we have a geographic focus. Part of that focus is in the northeastern part of Alberta, so we've chosen to spend the resources that we have to start the implementation in the northeast, and we also said we would start it in the very southern part of the province. So two areas where we knew there was strong ecological concerns, and we said those are two places where we would start rolling out the program. But yes, the program is very active and very effective in those regions, and starting to become more effective as we're ramping up throughout the rest of the province.
How do people or organizations use the information that you're gathering?
Originally, we designed the program on this broad regional scale to look at what kinds of critters are found in an area, what kinds of things do you find there, what kind of habitats do you find in an area, and designed it to assess how those elements, those critters and habitats, change over time. And that was where we really started the program. As we've got into the program, we found that we can do that in spades. We can assess ecological health, the status of biodiversity in broad regions very, very well with good confidence. But we also found we could do a lot more with the data. The information we collected is the same kinds of information. In fact, it's broader than what is collected by any researcher that's doing a particular research project. Collect information on many, many different taxa, a whole diversity of habitats, and lots of landscape information. So as a result, we said we can use this information for more than just regional monitoring. So regional monitoring is still the core of the program. It is assessing status and trend at the regional level to allow managers and planners to assess whether or not they're doing a good job at managing the ecosystem. But we said we can do more. So we can do things like help folks assess cumulative effects in a region, or help folks assess things like recovery in areas that have been reclaimed, that have been developed and then reclaimed, helping folks manage conservation offsets. So we said we can do more with the data than we originally planned, and we are just starting to explore some of those things right now.
Well, let's explore some of those things. First of all, tell me about this idea of how you might use it in assessing reclamation.
When one does a development, the expectation is that at some stage, after the resources have been extracted, then the area will be reclaimed back to some sort of a natural environment. That reclamation, then one has to assess, did we achieve our goals of putting it back to a undisturbed condition? The ABMI collects lots and lots of information throughout the province, and many of the places where we collect information are undisturbed. So it's quite possible to use ABMI information to describe the types of conditions you'd expect in any given site in an undisturbed condition. So what would you expect in undisturbed conditions in a fen, in undisturbed conditions in a pine forest, or undisturbed conditions in a native grassland? The ABMI has collected that kinds of information. So then when folks reclaim an area, they can use ABMI information and say, to what degree has my reclaimed area similar to those undisturbed conditions that ABMI has already sampled and described? So ABMI provides the information that we then use, or the folks could use, to assess whether or not their reclamation is meeting their original goals of going back to natural conditions.
Another term that you mentioned was conservation offsets. What's that, and how would you use that?
When folks develop an area, or at least when some folks do, they choose to buy a different area as an offset for the development area. So when you develop an area, the ecological things that live in the area, the species that live there, the habitats that were there, usually are changed. You think of a mine, or think of an industrial development. We change the habitat, and as a result, the species that live there no longer are able to live there. So some companies choose to buy an offset, buy a different piece of land, and use that as an offset of their ecological effects in the area they've developed. Well, the ABMI information then can be used to assess what is the ecological characteristics of the area that they're developing, what is the ecological characteristics in the area they're choosing to buy as an offset, and how much of the offset needs to be bought so that they have a relatively fair trade between these two areas. So we simply use ABMI information to assess the ecological conditions in the two different areas to assess the trade-off between them, the relative ecological values of those two different areas.
In Alberta, the land use framework is something new, and you've mentioned that the ABMI would be helpful with that in terms of developing policy or things that happen. So what exactly would you do? How are the two meshed?
The land use framework works at the broad regional scale, the scale that the ABMI was developed for, and at those broad regional scales, goals and targets are developed for a wide variety of ecological things. Things like maintaining a certain amount of natural habitat, maintaining a certain amount of different types of vegetation conditions, whether it be forests or wetlands or grasslands, maintaining certain amounts of different kinds of critters. Oftentimes these are rare or uncommon things, or they might be things that people are especially concerned about, like think old forest bird species or something like that. The ABMI collects information on the amounts of these different types of things, whether it be habitats or critters, today, and over time we collect the information on the amounts that are present. And so the ABMI supplies information to the land use framework to assess what is the present status of these ecological entities of which they're interested in. They call them indicators. What is the status of these ecological indicators, and how is that status changing over time? And the land use framework then can use the information from ABMI to assess, did they meet their goals and targets for those particular indicators, those ecological things that they were interested in maintaining or enhancing as part of the land use framework.
You also mentioned rare or species at risk. What are some of the concerns there? Certainly in Alberta, caribou is one that always gets the headlines.
The ABMI is designed to collect information on many, many, many species. In addition, though, we collect a lot of information on habitats. These are landscape characteristics. Think of it as remote sensing, satellite images. We collect quite a lot of information on the habitats that these species use. The ABMI doesn't get a lot of hits for species at risk, things like caribou or grizzly bear. We get some, but not a lot. There are other organizations throughout the province that collect more information. So we have been exploring how can we integrate data that's collected by the ABMI plus data that's collected by other organizations to provide information that managers and planners can use when they're developing an area or doing these regional plans. In addition, we're developing the math, the modeling that goes along with how one would assess status and change for these rarer critters. The neat part about the ABMI, by having access to these remote sense data, these satellite images, habitat data, we can also then assess the changes in habitat for these rare critters and allow folks to model then expected changes in the critters over time. So using ABMI information plus information from other organizations, we supply information that managers can use to assess change status and change in rare critters, and provide information on the habitats for these rare critters so that managers get a feel for where they expect to find things not working out in the future, or where they have less concerns because the habitat looks like it's going to be just fine for these critters in the future.
When you started the program, you weren't starting off with a pristine Alberta. You were plunked down in the middle of all kinds of different levels of development, and certainly as time goes by, things do change. How do you deal with those changes or the cumulative effects of those changes?
We've just started to explore in the ABMI how we can use ABMI information to help managers assess cumulative effects throughout a region or throughout a smaller area. And part of it comes down to the ABMI, by collecting information on these landscapes, these satellite images, if you wish, the habitats they're found in an area, we can help folks identify the kinds of things that are unique to any given area and where those unique things are found. We can help folks understand when developments happen, what kinds of unique habitats are going to get altered by development. And that's a big part of cumulative effects assessment. In addition, we help folks understand the types of critters that one finds in an area And the modeling that we do allows folks to not only see what is present there, but make predictions about what is expected to be found in an area. And those are a big part of cumulative effects. But cumulative effects actually tries to predict, or at least developments, try to predict what the consequences of the development will be in the future on these habitats and on these kinds of critters. It's that prediction into the future where ABMI has some real strengths. We help folks develop the models to predict how things are associated with the environment and consequently how they may change in the future. But the ABMI will then collect information in the future to see whether the predictions are actually upheld. It's like predicting it's going to rain next Tuesday. I can predict it might rain, and it might rain, but it might not. The same thing goes with predicting what the consequences of a development is. We predict it, we use the best information we have, but the prediction may or may not be true. And by sampling then in the future, we get a really good estimate, or we get an actual sample, of whether or not the prediction held. And if it held, it means as we move down the road, the next person that's doing the prediction has more confidence in the prediction. If the prediction doesn't hold, it means that we need to rethink what the prediction is and develop some different models so that the predictions become better over time. This is the quintessential of adaptive management. It's learn over time so we get better and better at making management decisions. And the ABMI, by being a long-term program, we collect the data to figure out whether the predictions hold, whether or not it really did rain next Tuesday.
How do you maintain the scientific rigor of the program?
We have two main ways that we go about that. There's a science team, an internal science team in the program, and we meet every month or two as we develop ideas, as we do modeling, as we test different protocols. Anything that comes up with science and technical aspects, we review as part of that science team. And there's 8 or 10 people. We meet every couple of months. We sit around the table. We hash out what seems to be working, what doesn't seem to be working, what can we try, and then between meetings, we try a bunch of things so that we gradually hone in the things that we're doing so they make sense, so they're rigorous. Everything that the ABMI does then goes out for peer review. So once we've decided that this seems to be working, this seems to be something that holds in water, that we can go with it, it's working and we're finding things that make sense, we send it out for peer review. And these are peers that don't have any stake in the program, and we ask them whether or not they agree with what we're doing. And so everything we do in the ABMI goes through this peer review. And that's quite a strength, because what it means is we then get the confidence that it's not just folks that are involved in a day-to-day are thinking it's a good idea. We have other scientific peers that are nodding their heads that this seems reasonable. The third thing that we do is, on a yearly basis, we have an international science committee, and we selected folks from around the world that are really the leaders in this field of monitoring ecosystems, monitoring biodiversity. We meet with four of these scientific peers from around the world, and they review the whole of the program. So they don't review the individual details, but they review the broad scope of the ABMI and suggest ways to position the program so that we're better able to meet the needs, both academic needs, scientific needs, and management needs throughout Alberta.
Can you give me an example of where ABMI, the material gathered, has been used by one of your partners or clients, and it's actually made a difference? If we hadn't had it, things would have been different.
Recently, in the last couple of years, we've done some work with Alberta Pacific Forest Products. They were interested, and as part of the work that they do with FSC, Forest Stewardship Council, they are required on their FMA to confirm that their management actions are having the effects that they said they would. So expectation from LPAC's perspective is that the cut blocks they create will recover back to a natural system. So in the last couple of years, we've worked with LPAC, well, really they have funded data collection in their cut blocks, and we've used that information to compare whether or not the cut blocks that they've created are recovering over time back to natural forest conditions. So immediately after the cutting, after the harvest, everybody knows, and there's been a bunch of work that says, yes, the critters that live in a cut block are different than the critters that lived there before or that lived in a post-fire area. But the expectation is that over time, these cut blocks will recover, the trees will regrow, the vegetation will regrow, and the critters will start to come back and become more natural. So with the work that they've sampled, so we sampled some 15-year-old cut blocks, and we're able to show that those cut blocks are on the road to recovering back towards more natural habitats, so habitats that are the kind that were found there prior to the cutting. And this is the piece that ALPAC needs to have to satisfy their FSC conditions, their Forest Stewardship Council. It's part of meeting that condition, they have to be able to show this.
If you had to sum up the effort that's gone into developing the ABMI, what would you say to other people who are looking at Alberta, that are looking at you?
It's taken a heck of a lot longer than we thought it was going to. Originally, when we sat around the table at the forest conference, we assumed that we could probably develop in a year or two and implement it throughout the province. At that stage, it was throughout the forest, relatively cheaply with 10 or 12 summer students. It turns out it's a much, much bigger program. To do a rigorous job of this, it requires a lot of effort, a lot of development, and a lot of scientific thought to make the program work. And that means it's also an expensive program. So one needs to be conscious to take time to do it right, to get reasonable information, and recognize it's going to be expensive. You need to be in for the long haul or it isn't going to work. Having said that, the information that comes out is amazing. There's darn few, probably no place else in the world that has the quality of information and the breadth of information across broad areas like we presently are getting in Alberta.
Thank you very much, Jim.
My pleasure.